We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Well, what I found interesting, and again, it's like these folks who are in it today, who are interested in this today, they don't realize that they're like part of this generational thing. You know, that's the maybe they don't want to know, you know what I mean? Where maybe they'll just like,
yeah.
They don't want to know that this comes along every generation and then kind of dies out, and then it comes along again every like 20 or 30 years in a big way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember when you were interviewing Mark Sargent, you were bringing this up. He didn't seem all that interested himself. Like, yeah, it's just maybe they like thinking they're the first people to come up with, hey, the Earth looks flat, doesn't seem round.
Well, yeah, maybe I think maybe part of it too is like if they have to like look in the proverbial mirror of the flat Earth and be like, wait a minute, now this has been around for like 150 years. It's like older than any of like the conspiracy theories people talk about now, except for some of the really like rudimentary ones where there's like the Illuminati controls the world kind of stuff. But it's like it's older than like JFK and 9/11 by a long shot.
Yeah.
So so maybe part of it is sort of like this subliminal thing where it's like. Because that was kind of the impression they gave me. Like, no, we're the new generation. We're the new generation of flat earth. We don't need to worry about what happened before. And it's like, is that because you guys have spent the last 150 years trying to do this and it hasn't worked out yet? Like, at what point do you give up on this?
Well, it's funny, too, there was I think it was – a woman named Sharon Hill. She wrote a book called "Scientifical Americans," but it's this idea of what she calls scientifical thinking. It's not like they're not using science, but they're using what seems like science to them to prove their point. And actually, I think she was talking about this a lot with cryptozoology and UFO researchers. But I think with flat earthers too, it's the idea that. A lot of these groups thinking that, we're the first, we're using science to prove that this is real, but most of them have no scientific training. And I mean, I say I have no scientific, I could not do any of this stuff either,
but it's
just, if something sounds scientific or it seems like science doing it, then, that's okay. Now it just has to sound scientific and that's just as good as actual science.
Yeah. Well, I was explaining that to some people recently. I did a little online presentation on history of the flat earth and sort of explaining that to people, like how I think people nowadays get hooked into it because they get bombarded with all of these questions, which traces back to Rebotham and Parallax and the old idea of like 100 proofs that the earth is flat. It's like they still use the same textbook from then, but even on the YouTube videos where they're like 200, now they've somehow increased it to 200. It's like 200 reasons why the earth is flat. And, you get up to, like, some of them, you get to, like, number 30 or whatever, and it's like, when Venus is here and Mars is there, how come this looks that way in the sky? And it's like some crazy fucking math that, like, nobody, unless you're an armchair astronomer or a genuine astronomer or whatever, unless you have some more than a modicum of training in this stuff, you have no idea, like, no one has – any idea why things look the way they do and shit from here. So I can see why some people are like, that doesn't make any sense. When if you were an astronomer, you'd be like, well, it's because of the atmosphere and this, that, the other thing, and the angle and the sun, all that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just, on the one hand, there's, a common sense explanation of why something seems like the case, and then there's the long, complicated technical thing that, you need a PhD to understand. It's obvious, if you have to spend more than, like 10 seconds refuting something that seems, commonplace, to say, like, why are people in China not falling off the earth? If they're upside down, but, then having to go into a long talk about gravitation and, Newton and Einstein, all that's just.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see why people can get bamboozled by the idea. So, but what's interesting too is that I think you can speak to this, is that there's a really people don't, when they think about the flat earthers, I think a good portion of them are, this is like religious doctrine. There's a deep, mm-hmm. this isn't like a matter of belief. This is a matter of faith for them. And I think once you kind of see that, and it's been that way like since the beginning, since, his name escapes me, but Rebotham's understudy there, the guy who took the reins and had the bet with the guy who co-invented
yeah, it was
theory of evolution.
I know who you're Campbell or
something like that. Yeah, Hampton or Hampstead or something like that. But since him, there's always there's a thread of like I call them like OG creationists. They're and it kind of ties into like what you were saying about Rhodes, where it's like they're.
Yep.
They're not just – they're so into the – they're so committed to the creationist thing that they even contend that the earth is flat. And this is like people from back in like the 1880s all the way up to some of the people I was hanging out with in Dallas. You know, perfectly lovely
mm-hmm.
people but are super religious and OG creationists who say that the earth is flat. So there's a deep religious underpinning to this.
That's one of the most when I started looking deeper into the flat earth movement, that's what really surprised me is how much of it really is religious. And it is funny too, because, you know, if you just like take cursory, you know, listen to some of the stuff, I mean, that some of the more prominent ones say, it doesn't really come out, but if you start listening more and more, it just becomes clear that, you know, this very, you know, fundamentalist Protestant mainly worldview is, you know, they're going back to, oh, the Bible proves the earth is flat, therefore it is. And just how much throughout history, too, it's just this is almost in every case. There was a couple years ago, I don't know if you heard about this, in a university in Tunisia that was going to, or someone there was trying to have a doctoral dissertation proving the earth was flat. And this was kind of a big hubbub, and you know, it was people clutching pearls. You know, this university was going to pass this dissertation, all this, but, I mean, which they didn't, but it caused a brief uproar. But what was really interesting about me is this, I mean, that dissertation, if even though it was rejected, but this is like one of the only things I've seen where it was at least trying to be a purely scientific explanation of a flat earth with absolutely no religious arguments at all. And I mean, I think that's the only one I've really seen. I mean, it was really unique for that case.
I thought I sent you one that was another one from Israel. I didn't know. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah. Yeah, it was recently, like last year. I never heard whatever became of it, but yeah, some young lady who, I guess she's a flat earther in Israel, and she tried to pass her dissertation on that. So let me see if I can find that while I talk to you about it. Do you know any real, any contemporary flat earthers? Like, have you ever met a flat earther?
Not really. Well, maybe I have, but yeah, unfortunately I have not really had the chance to talk about any of this in person, which is why I really would have, loved to have gone to the conference this year and seen some in person. But yes, yeah, so I've never actually had the kind of discussion or debate with them. I've tried to approach some of them online, just been like, here's what I'm interested in, would you be willing to talk, and never gotten any kind of response. But I'm a bit hesitant about doing like a social media approach, since that may be opening a can of worms. But if there are any flat earthers listening to this and they want to get in touch with me, please do. But yeah.
Yeah. See, I think I'm not even this one. High school in Israel under fire for hosting flat earthers as guest speakers. So that's a segue to plans to look at what got us talking originally was kind of what I alluded to earlier. It's like you've looked at a lot of this flat earth in areas that I hadn't even explored. And that's what got us talking originally at Lauren's event, because you had mentioned Boko Haram being flat earthers, and that was I've never heard of that. So talk about the Boko Haram flat earth connection.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was just reading about some of this today too, so it's good you asked. It's got a couple more documents in. But for those who aren't aware, Boko Haram is a in northern Nigeria. It's a Muslim, I guess Sunni Muslim fundamentalist group, I guess, very similar to ISIS. I mean, they actually became affiliated with ISIS for a while, but it began as a movement led by a guy named Muhammad Yusuf. I think 2002 they originated, and it was originally a kind of like a traditionalist Muslim reform movement saying, well, let's go back to the basics from the Quran as they saw it, and not be associated with the modern world, which in their view, or at least Muhammad Yusuf's argument, was that modern education was actually Western imperialism imported by the British, in contrast with the longstanding pre-colonial Muslim education system in West Africa. So he's starting to have some of these debates. As far as I could tell, the first argument supported a flat earth argument was he was coming from in 2004, he was having a debate with a pro-Western Muslim cleric. And actually, I can bring up, I have this right here. Let's see. So he was saying that his argument was that according to the Quran, okay, he says, the sun runs to its fixed destination. This is the decree of the Almighty, the All-Knowing. So this is his basis for saying, the Quran has this line, therefore the sun doesn't move, the earth is flat. I think the reference to the four corners of the earth you hear them talk about in the Bible is also from in the Quran also. But in 2009, the Muslim state, the Nigerian government rather, tried to crack down on Boko Haram, and so led to this ongoing uprising they lead against the Nigerian government. Muhammad Yusuf, he was actually arrested and executed pretty quickly, but his successor, Abu Bakar Shikar, I think is his name, he's also mentioned Flat Earth. So actually, one of the unfortunate things, there's been a lot in the news about, the schoolgirls at Boko Haram have kidnapped or killed. But, groups, I guess, that they specifically target our geography teachers because of their flat earth belief. So this is, I think, not in a Western context, but this is a case where flat eartherism has had very deadly repercussions, where Boko Haram has specifically targeted geography teachers in Nigeria and really across West Africa because of this. That being said, this is, I mentioned that they became affiliated with ISIS. I don't know if I've not found anything about like ISIS or the Taliban or Al Qaeda or any other, these similar Muslim radical groups being flat earth. So this may be something that comes specifically from that strain in Boko Haram's thought. For a brief time in the 1980s in Saudi Arabia, there was a Muslim cleric who was a flat earther, but he did move away from that view, although it seems as though he maintained a geocentric view, which also is interesting. He rejects the flat earth, but clings to geocentrism. And he eventually became, in the 90s, the chief Muslim cleric in Saudi Arabia. So there's that connection too. But in terms of modern Muslim movements that are embracing flat eartherism, as far as I can tell, Boko Haram seems to be it.
Well, yeah. That's what got us talking originally, because it's so out of left field, because everybody just hears about, the wacky flat earthers in the English-speaking countries. But a lot of people opened my eyes when I was in Dallas was, then later there was like an AP article about it, which kind of like fleshed out what I had learned. And apparently there's like a massive audience of flat earth people in Brazil.
I know for a time, at least, it was the Minister of Education and the Minister of Foreign Relations, right under the current president when he got into power, Bolsonaro. They were flat earthers because his main political guru, which is, I think his name is Olavo de Carvalho, which probably not pronouncing that anywhere close to right, but he's like a YouTube astrologer who became President Bolsonaro's big political advisor, and he's a flat earther, so he was giving all these suggestions to be flat earthers to put in cabinet positions in the Brazilian government, which is, you know, a crazy thing to think about.
yeah, it's pretty wild. It's yeah, I've been trying to draw a line between the flat earthers and this Q thing, but it hasn't really quite happened yet. There are definitely Q people who subscribe to the flat earth theory. I don't know.
That's
I tried
really interesting
to when I
too.
Talk,
yeah,
yeah, when I talked to the flat earthers, they weren't Q people. They didn't really know what the hell it was. So hopefully I didn't turn anyone on to it. But
yeah,
they didn't
QAnon
really.
Yeah. That's just an interesting thing. I mean, it's like, I don't know when I first heard about QAnon. I think was it Roseanne when she had her meltdown? I think she started talking about it then. But yes, I've started following QAnon. I've not started following QAnon. I've started becoming interested in the QAnon movement. But
yeah,
it's just the way that's evolved. I mean, it's the fact that there are going to be QAnon members in Congress after
it's
November,
really
frightening. I mean, almost, it's, but I mean, even like we're talking about Australia, like the new Prime Minister of Australia, by all accounts, is a QAnon supporter. And like one of his close friends and advisors is absolutely a QAnon person. There's been QAnon statements dropped into the Prime Minister. I think like the former, maybe not the Conservative Party in Canada, but like a relatively recently, a major political party leader in Canada also was a QAnon supporter. So it's just like, it's not even just in the U.S., which is just so strange because the QAnon like mythology is so centered around Trump and U.S. politics. And it's
it's something about it's really creepy. Yeah, it's really. Well, I went down a rabbit hole this week, actually, because all that stuff came out about the lady who's almost certainly going to be elected to Congress, who's a QAnon. She's trying to, like, distance herself from it now, but it's like, lady, you're, you know, come on. We all know you're a QAnon lady. So, but somebody was like, hey, you know, this is like, I don't forget how they mentioned it, but they cited the cult in Japan. And they were like, I guess apparently the cult in Japan, I don't know the name of it, people will know, it had
Om Shinriko?
A colorful, what's that?
Was it Om Shinriko?
Gotta be, yeah.
Yeah,
and, yeah. And they had a colorful leader and everything, and the, you know, the people, the person who made the tweet, I wish I could cite them, but it was like late at night, and I was just, they linked to an old thread that they had written. And I was like, what the hell is, because they were like, yeah, okay, we're laughing at these QAnon people. They laughed at that cult in Japan, because apparently they ran like a whole shitload of people for Japanese Congress. And when they were like laughed out of the building and the polls, I guess, they got all pissed off and they were like, all right, well, if we can't get in and influence government, we're going to start blowing shit, or, you know, gassing people in the subways and shit.
Yep.
That was sort of the idea of what happened. So that's what scares me about these QAnon people. It's like they're not a happy-go-lucky cult, folks. They seem driven to violence. So
I mean, and they've already, like, this QAnon, like, it's only been around for, what, like 2 years. They've already killed people. Like there's Staten Island, the mobster who was killed by a QAnon.
Oh, yeah,
guy
I forgot about that.
Who,
yeah.
The QAnon guy who killed his twin brother because he thought he was a lizard person. But, I mean, there's more of these. But, yeah, it's, I mean, it's already has a body count.
It's already turned
dangerous,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very weird. Now, I want to ask you about this because similar to the mammoth story, in your article, Squaring the Spheroid, and we'll have all these linked at the Banal of America site, you mentioned this crazy thing that I'd never heard of, much like the mammoth thing, the Great Moon Hoax of 1835. So at first I was like, I'm skimming this, and I see Great Moon Hoax, and I'm thinking, oh, the moon hoax theory. This is a whole different thing that happened in 1835 that I was like, what? I never even heard of this. So tell me about the Great the great moon hoax of 1835, because it's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a great story. Yeah, it was just in these, you know, U.S. newspapers in 1835, all of a sudden there's these reports that this famous astronomer, I think it was William Herschel, I think, in South Africa, you know, he was British, but he was going to South Africa to work at the Cape Town Observatory, that, you know, he had developed this new telescope and aimed it at the moon, and it turns out that there's all these, you know, weird bat-like people living on the moon, and just, you know, day after day, these reports from South Africa were coming about this astronomer, you know, making these discoveries, you know, on the moon, this telescope of alien life, and then, of course, you know, it petered out, but, and of course, it's all fake, but for weeks, it's this newspaper making up this story out of whole cloth about, you know, aliens being discovered on the moon, basically. I think it's one of the first, like, extraterrestrial life hoaxes, at least in the American print media. Also, one of the first big newspaper hoaxes, also, you know, made explicitly just to drive up numbers. But the interesting thing is, I mean, it had a kernel of truth. This was a real astronomer. He really was going to the Cape Town Observatory. He really was observing the moon. So I think it shows also, you know, like the best hoaxes have this kind of, you know, baseline of fact to them that are building off. I think he actually he was kind of amused when he later heard about it, then kind of got pissed off as it continued. I think.
So he had no idea.
Until well after this happened.
Oh, wow. It's even weirder.
Yeah.
Wow, all right.
But again, also, you know, it's one of those things where people at the time, maybe, you know, even if, you know, I mean, at the time, you know, aliens living on the moon, sure, it seemed plausible. But, you know, news from South Africa doesn't come in that fast across the Atlantic in the 1830s.
Yeah.
So you'd think that.
I
was going to say Edgar Allan Poe got pissed off because he thought they were basically plagiarizing a story he had written recently, which I think is called The Adventures of Hans Fall or something. But it was basically about a guy, you know, going on a hot air balloon to reach the moon and, you know, writing dispatches about the moon. So he thought actually this whole hoax was them ripping off this story he had written. And then he wrote this other story as a result that was like a hoax about a guy using a balloon to cross the Atlantic Ocean, which also was taken as fact. So again, it's, you know, where fiction and reality kind of keep crossing the wires.
Yeah. That's just what a weird story. See, I thought the guy had been like sending these dispatches like faked, you know, like Percival Lovell kind of thing. I don't know if Lovell faked it or was just confused or what, but I thought it was something like that where the guy was like, oh, I have, you know, there was a fucking bug on his telescope, and he was like,
yeah.
This is not, you know, like that Kent Brockman thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they got to sell newspapers. I think, you know, it's also, we talk a lot about fake news now, but I think people don't realize how in the 1800s, just how much of like just complete hoaxes were in the news. And I think also that I've seen the argument made that, you know, when people go back through old newspaper records and they'll see things about, you know, like giant pterodactyl found in the Old West, or, you know, like all the stories about, you know, throughout the like 1870s, there's all these stories about, you know, meteorites crashing with you know, Egyptian hieroglyphics in it. I think this is something where people at the time would have recognized, all right, they're just making up sensational stories because they got to sell copies. I think maybe there was an understanding that news and fiction were not as separate then, but now when, you know, researchers are looking back and they're saying, oh, this newspaper is reporting, you know, about dinosaurs being found in Montana or whatever, that it's hard, you know, from our point of view, news is supposed to be objective and true and real. Whereas at the time it was basically just, well, we'll report on the news and we got some pages we got to fill. So let's just come up with a good story.
That's entirely. Yeah, that's very easy to believe. That's very plausible. It would be interesting. Like, it's one of those things, like, you wish you could go back in time, because it's like, nowadays, people might look at these archives and be like, they fucking believe this shit. Can you believe they believed it? And then like, if you were at that time frame, they might be like, oh, this is just, they just make up shit on Thursdays. Maybe nobody's done, like, maybe no one's charted it out, and it turns out it's something as simple as that, where it's like, oh, yeah, Thursdays they always just put out the craziest shit they can make up. It's like a,
exactly.
You know.
But it was funny. I mean, a lot of, like, cryptozoologists or people looking for ancient alien stuff, I mean, a lot of times they'll cite these old newspaper stories, and I think, it's not that, they're deliberately misrepresenting what they're finding in these old newspapers. I think, it's like the Charles Fort stuff where he's just, filling out these books with, like, hey, isn't it weird how all this stuff got, basically, everything Charles Fort wrote about is him just copying these weird stories from newspapers that probably were not even true to begin with, and if they were true, were just exaggerated.
Right, exactly. It's, yeah, it's a, like I said, it'd be interesting to go back in time and see what that perspective would be. And you're absolutely right, where it's people, they any sort of interpretation of past stuff or legends and stuff like that, they add their own spin to it. I wouldn't even know if it's confirmation bias or what, but it's sort of like they don't necessarily go, oh, well, maybe they knew this was bullshit. So
yeah.
It's entirely possible.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so I wish you were at the Flat Earth thing. It'll be interesting. I don't know how closely you follow the field, but I think I was telling you before we started the show that it's like, I think, and I did a presentation last October about this, or September, and it was the question at the end was like, have we hit peak Flat Earth? And I think with the pandemic and everything, I think that we may have. I think from what I've seen, a lot of the Flat Earth people I know have moved on to plandemic conspiracy theories, which is very interesting, because what I took away – people, I guess they probably don't even listen anymore. People who like – I'm really super liberal, so I rip on Trump on the show, so – but that's not what I'm getting to now. People, that's one of the stereotypes, I guess, and it's like,
yeah.
Oh, all Flat Earthers are just Trump fans and, blah, 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 and that kind of thing. But to a man or woman, I found that they were surprisingly apolitical at the Flat Earth convention.
Oh, yeah.
So them getting all plandemic-y was kind of disappointing in a way and kind of heartbreaking, because it was like, oh, man, I came out of Dallas thinking that you guys were harmless and you just believed something kind of out of the ordinary, but people that believe in Santa Claus, it's like, well, you're not hurting anybody if you believe in Santa Claus, so I can't really be a dick. But then when it's like, once you get into the pandemic shit, then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I guess your willingness to believe anything is actually not a good thing.
I feel like, since we've been talking about QAnon, I feel like that's really explained the big change in QAnon also. I feel like that's been a big pipeline into the Q followers, is plandemic and everything associated with that, and the anti-mask.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been, it's just interesting that there's so, like, I feel like that's shuttling so many new people into QAnon, but at the same time, I think, feel like we were talking about the Flat Earth, I think all these new people who are joining QAnon don't necessarily know the background of their own movement, which sounds ridiculous because it's only like, what, 2 or 3 years old, but know about, like, like the secret military tribunals to execute Hillary Clinton and this, like the satanic cabal. They just know, all right, they're anti- vaccine, they're against mask mandates. Okay, yeah, I'm going to join QAnon.
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah. Because it does seem like if you talk, I know, I've seen a lot of people I know, not from the paranormal world, but like people I grew up with, and not a lot, but like 2 or 3 or 4, which is actually kind of a lot, like if you think about people you went to high school with. Who have gone, like, full-on plandemic, some to the point of becoming like QAnon people just since the pandemic started. So it's like this has somehow turned on a shitload of people to this alternative conspiracy world, and it's like, what the f- – and the fucked up part is they get radicalized so fast.
Yeah, really. I know, it's like it's so fast, and they'll be like, I just spent the last two nights straight without sleep watching, you know, Fall of the Cabal Part 5, and it's like, you're staying up, like, 48 hours straight watching, like, cheap YouTube videos?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they get all frantic, like, I've noticed, they and they get all frantic, and they're like, we gotta fucking save the children, we gotta save the children, and it's like, that was the big thing, like, this week, I guess they tried to, like, they were using save the children as the hashtag,
That's
and it's
right,
like,
yeah.
No, dude, save the children's already hashtag for, like, actually saving the children, so, so, you know, not pulling them out of fucking sex dungeons underground out of the sewers, which is, like, you know, the mole children, that's, like, part of their
the
fucking theory.
I think the mole children may be my favorite thing to have had happen as a result of the coronavirus. Just like that becoming something that people had to actually talk about, and just like it's funny because I've heard that there's at least one or two of like the old school QAnon people who for them the mole children was just one step too far. And I know just recently, like the last week or so, one of the other big like original era QAnon people left the movement too. So I think there is this big turnaround that's happened. It's, I think it makes sense too, because, you know, if you're a QAnon follower and you've just been told for the past 3 years, you know, there's a secret plan and Trump is going to win and all this stuff. And then just keeps fucking up worse and worse and worse. I mean, I think it makes sense
yeah.
at this point. They're going to be like, maybe there is no plan. I'm going to head out. But at the same time, now there's all these, yeah, it's interesting too, because trust the plan. They used to be, you see that all the time with the QAnon followers, and I don't think that's really a part of, like, the new people joining it either. So I think, in many ways, I think maybe that's even worse, because it's just they have no, like, plan that they're putting all their trust in, so they can just be in it for the long haul and not feel disappointed or betrayed or anything when nothing happens.
Yeah. Well, I got creeped out, too. Went down a couple of rabbit holes this week, yeah, but I got creeped out by that. In a sense where it's like, if you really think about what they, if you really think about like what they want, is they, what they really want is like a fascist fucking government that rounds up all of the people they don't like and executes them. And it's like, that's a fucking, that's your fucking end game, guys. Like, no, I don't want any part of that. I don't want any part of a fascist government that rounds up all the evildoers who you've deemed evildoers. Like, and executes them.
Yeah, it's just
that's
like,
fucking scary that that's really
their
like
dream
what they
for
want.
The better world is mass executions of like every like hundreds of thousands of people. And so, like, yeah, oh my
yeah.
God. Like, and they're going to get elected to Congress.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
boy.
It's pretty wild.
The,
it's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Well, I was just going to say, like, looking into like the history of Boko Haram recently, like one thing I had no idea of before, like really finding this recent, that the thing that triggered the start of the Boko Haram uprising in Nigeria was that the Nigerian government passed a law requiring that motorcyclists had to wear helmets because there are so many motorcycle accidents happening. And so the Boko Haram members were not wearing helmets on motorcycles. So they got arrested for not following the helmet law, and then that's the trigger that set off the insurrection. So finding that out and then looking at all the anti-mask protests, you know, like people armed with assault rifles like going into state capitals, I was just like, if this goes on for another year, you know, say hypothetically Joe Biden is elected president and there's a Democratic president who then passes, you know, like a national mandatory mask law, or I mean, like that's going to like
– yeah.
That would be like if this is the reaction when Trump is president, if there's a Democrat trying to pass this, I think that's going to lead to like armed insurrection, real, which is what a weird thing that, but to actually seriously think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure, like I said, most of the MAGA folks probably have disowned me by now, but
yeah,
yeah, I've heard that theorized that if like Biden wins, we're going to see just like a lot of shitty domestic terrorism from people who don't want to accept what, you know, the change of the guard or whatever, you know. But I hope that's not the case. I get that they liked Donald Trump a lot, man. But it's like, I'm old or something. I don't know, man. I yearn for normalcy. I yearn for, like, what I haven't thought about the president in, like, a couple weeks.
Yeah.
That's kind of just what that's a big influence on my, beyond everything else, that's a big influence on my, but I just want peace of mind. I just want to go back to the quiet days when it's like, okay, he's doing shit. He's taking care of shit. I don't need to worry about all this stuff. So, we'll see. We got a couple months, 2 or 3 months left.
Yeah. Let's see how crazy things get. Yeah, we got plenty of time for even more ridiculous, weird, bizarre stuff to enter national discourse.
Absolutely. Now, I forget where I read this. I'm really terrible at citing sources, but I read somewhere like that someone cited some articles. They were talking about like the UFO world. It might have been Sarah Scholl's book, but I can't be sure. But it was sort of about, I guess I'm going to skip all that long-winded thing. I would like to see you tackle a book. If you ever have go down another avenue, if you're looking for another thing to look at, would be this idea, kind of what we're talking about with the Great Moon Hoax of 1852, of like how long has this idea of aliens, for lack of a better term, off-world people, not gods, but like in a scientific kind of way, how long has that been going on and how has that evolved? I think that would be interesting to look at, because I could have sworn the thing I'm referencing was like that it was like in the late 1800s or early 1900s, you know, there were articles in people get all excited now, right? Oh, it's in the New York Times. There were like articles in the New York Times back then about how, you know, scientists of the day who were like sort of arguing about whether or not there were beings, you know, a civilization on the moon or something like that. So it'd be interesting to know how far back that goes.
There's a good, I'm looking it up now. Okay, it's the author is named Michael J. Crow, and the title is The Extraterrestrial Life Debate, 1750 to 1900. But, yeah, it's pretty much it's a history of this, you know, the idea of aliens, you know, as extraterrestrials from the 18th to the 1900s. I think it covers, like, Percival Lowell, but also, like, Immanuel Kant's involved in that. But, yeah, it's a good general overview, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it is very interesting to think about you know, this idea of just how the idea of, like, scientific aliens versus God being up in heaven, that diverging, and the similarities and also why they start to differentiate. I think it's, in some ways, I think it's kind of like a secular version or religious version, maybe, of I was talking about earlier, how cryptozoology and zoology, you go far back enough, are the same. You know, I think you go far back enough, some strange entity living in the sky, there's not really a need to differentiate. And then once you start getting modern ideas of astronomy, you have to divide that God versus alien part ways that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting... Yeah, exactly. At some point, there was some schism there, where it was like, because a lot of people do sometimes behave that in a way that these, if there are aliens, that they're like, that they are the gods. That's the idea, chariots of the gods, sort of thing. So it's like, it would be, I'll have to check that out, that book. So now you don't have to do that research.
Yeah. You saved me having to write.
Now, you're like the, this is really weird, right? You're the only person I know who I've known, you joked about it at the start of the show, but you're the only person I've known who became a doctor, like, since I knew them. So you kind of, like, laughed about that at the beginning of the show. Here's the funny part. When I met you that weekend, we went down to... Not you and me, but me and a group of us from the thing went down to the Bissell Brothers Brewery next to Lawrence Museum, and there was a young lady there who was celebrating that she had just got her doctorate. So, and then when I left, I kind of did the same thing that I did to you, where I was like, hey, you know, have a nice night, doctor, or have a great weekend, doctor. And she was like, oh, that's awesome. It's just so weird to hear. And so you're that. Even though I really only talked to her for like 2 minutes in line to get beers at Bristol Brothers, she's the second. You're the second person I met who became a doctor, but you're actually a person I know. So I just saw all those weird coincidences. But so I guess, what is it? What's it like to? Is it weird? Do you tell people, like, did you have you? I obviously kind of like your Twitter, Edward Guimont, and is it Guimont? I keep wanting to kind of put a little
Guimont, yeah,
like accent on it. but your it's Edward Guimont, the Twitter at EDWARD_GUIMONT. That's kind of your. You don't have a website or anything, so folks can find you on there. There'll be links up in all of America. But you changed your thing to, and appropriately, Dr. Edward Guimont. But what's it like? That's kind of one of those things where I'm like, shit, I should have fucking just done that. You know, I'm now, now I'm 41. I don't have time to go and get a doctorate. You know, I have very low hopes that I'm ever going to get like an honorary doctorate. So. The doctorateship has sailed for old Benal, but what is it? What's it like? I kind of my brother's actually he's a doctor of law, so
okay,
I forget. I think that's like an LLC or something like that. But
yeah,
what's it like? What's it like getting a doctorate?
Well, I mean, the defense and passing and celebrating, that was definitely, I mean, that feeling was really good. And then now, after the defense, going back to work, very little different. It's just it's the same. I mean, yeah, it's I felt a bit self-conscious about changing the Twitter handle. But I realized I put 9 years into getting the PhD, so I'm gonna ride. I've earned putting a little doctor in front of my name on Twitter. But yeah, it's, I mean, it still does feel strange sometimes, especially. When students will write an email to me or whatever, say, you know, Dr. Guimont, but it does sometimes feel very surreal. But I mean, I do think if I could get a PhD, I think anyone can. That's not being self-effacing. I mean, I feel like if I could just do the work, I think many people can. But so I try not to let it get to my head. I say that after mentioning how I'm. promoting myself with doctor in front of my name, but it's
nah, dude, it's understandable. My fucking brother, he's a dink. When he got, he's like, you should never feel bad, dude, after this story. So my brother, he got his doctorate, and he changed his fucking license plate in California to be like PhD LLC. So I was like, dude. Like, what is wrong with you, man? like, really? At first, I didn't believe it. I'm like, you're not really doing that. And it's like, holy shit, he really, that's his fucking, now, yeah, now someone's going, I don't want any stalkers stalking my brother, but I'm sure people have noticed, if they run into him out in California. But, yeah, I thought that was, like, the weirdest thing. But so you shouldn't feel bad about changing your Twitter handle. That's the...
I won't now.
Because that's like the weirdest.
It takes more than 5 minutes of just typing in something on Twitter. Then I think that's too much for me. Yeah. Anything less than that, I guess I can live with.
Yeah. Now, have you what's next for you? Have you thought about writing a book on this stuff? Expanding this stuff into a book?
Definitely eventually become. A book at some point. I don't know when exactly, but I think I've accumulated too much. I put too much work into it for it not to see the light of day someday. But really the whole thing with this whole pandemic, just putting so much research and pause. I mean, I think really across academia, there's going to be a bit of a lull in stuff coming out. But I mean,
yeah.
That's just life right now, I guess. But yeah, it's the mythical someday once after QAnon has purged the world of the evildoers, we're all going to be able to get back to work, and and then hopefully then the well, I'm sure I'm probably on some QAnon list somewhere, but
I'm sure we are. Well, what's the?
Yeah.
It's really cool what you're doing, because there's always it's sort of, I don't know if it's a stereotype or I guess an urban legend or a misconception maybe, where it's like, I think, and I even, yeah, it kind of got me when we were talking about what we were going to talk about on the show tonight, a couple weeks ago when I was like, all right, you're okay to talk about the flat earth, right? It's like, you're a genuine
yeah.
history professor at UConn. It's like, has there been, I guess they're cool with you sort of looking at shit like the old Zimbabwe city and lost cities
oh, yeah.
and okay, Meme and that kind of stuff. It's like, that's pretty awesome that there's no pushback on that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, I think there are certain topics in academia. I think that if you go into them, I think you're going to face a lot of pushback and maybe some other schools. Like if this was, I don't know, especially there's a big difference between private and public schools. But I mean, I think most private schools probably would be fine too. I've been very, like, after we went to the cryptozoology conference, I was talking about that to a lot of people, and they're real interested in hearing about that. I gave a version of my Mokele Mbembe paper to the history department at UConn. I think they take a very expansive view on history and, you know, what's legitimate to study. I think very few things are really off topic in that point of view.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. Yeah. Cause I've probably experienced more pushback in the paranormal community than you may have in academia, as far as like looking
yeah,
at the flat earth. Cause I've had
me.
People like every time I talk about it, I have to like stress, like I'm not a flat earther, folks. So I'm just interested in it. And No one ever believes that.
<Yeah.
laughs> When I interviewed Mark Sargent, God bless him, he took his end of the recording, he taped it on his end and put it on his YouTube channel. So, which is fine, I don't care. I just thought it was funny, and so I could look at the comments, and the people there were like, "No fucking way, this guy isn't a flat earther. He knows too much about it. He knows too much about it. He's a closet flat earther." It's like, no, dude, I just find your culture fascinating. But,
maybe someone,
yeah,
if someone approaches me and asks me if I'm really a closet flat earther, I'll take that as a mark. Well, I was going to say, I would take that as a compliment. Maybe I shouldn't, but I would be happy.
Almost
to
a worrisome compliment.
Yeah, yeah. I've had a few of those, but.
Yeah. Well, I always say I'm a friend of the flat earthers, although, yeah, as I said earlier to you, I was like, I don't know about these flat earthers. Stay in your lane, flat earthers. Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Just do the flat earth thing. Stop getting into this fucking pandemic shit. It's not, you're not ready for prime time with that stuff. But, because I've had people that are like, why are you talking about this? Why do you care about this flat earth stuff? It's like, why do you care about UFOs? Like, I want to know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to know why these people believe in such an old and repeatedly disproven conspiracy theory. Like, how can this still be popular? That, to me, is the most fascinating part about it.
Yeah, I think that's really the big question is, why does this, like, on the one hand, it's such an, you can understand why people would think that, because again, it's so intuitive that the earth is flat. The earth is not spinning. The horizon's flat. If you're on the other side of the earth and you'd be upside down. So there's, on the one hand, it's very intuitive. On the other hand, it's so easy to disprove on every level and has been repeatedly. And there's so much of the modern world is based on stuff that would be impossible with a flat earth. So it is this interesting, like back and forth between, on the one hand, you can understand why people believe it. On the other hand, you can't understand why people believe it.
Yeah, it's very, very, very strange. I mostly like all the people, even though they can get pretty aggressive and everything. So, I think they're all right. They're all right, folks. Well, we'll see what happens when the pandemic comes to an end. I want to thank, the show has pretty much come to an end, so I want to thank Jim Vujovic, who joined us in the chat, my buddy Jack Brewer, who was listening and sending me comments on Twitter, and Eaten by Bears, who just popped into the chat room and never did anything. So I want to thank those guys for listening, and I'm sure I'll have you back on the show, buddy. I really enjoyed the conversation. And, you know, we'll see where things go. Should people just follow you on Twitter? You don't have a website or anything like that, right?
No. If I have a website, I will announce it on Twitter. So until then, just follow me there. But yes, I had a great time. And hopefully, have me back anytime you want. Definitely happy to come back and contribute whatever I can to any topic of discussion. But
absolutely, man. Well, you're looking into stuff that I'd never even – a couple of people just now were like, as the show ended, they were like, holy shit, that went by fast. It was like, yeah, that was a, I'm like kind of stunned, but I can talk for a while, but I don't want to keep you too much longer. We'll see what happens in the world of the flat earth. I think, Yeah. Well, here's what I think happened. I know. Well, I think I talked to you about – we're still recording, so just a heads up. But I think – because, yeah, well, I don't want – you know, I didn't want you to be like, what, are all your audience assholes? Or something. I don't know what the fuck you'd say.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
It's just polite to let someone know you're still recording. That was like the most controversial words I could put, put in your mouth for that hypothetical situation. But I think this is my theory. I don't know if I talk to you about this softly here, but since if you got time, you want to talk a little bit longer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. My theory is that based on what I've seen in the history of all this, is that like this thing, as we talked about, it's like a wave. It comes up. And it captures the imagination of the public. And then, but science doesn't know what's happening. And then it gets publicity through the media. And then scientists like recoil in horror. And then they sort of rush in to debunk it. And then that breathes oxygen onto this fire that's sort of kindling. And then it blows up. And then it sort of slowly dies out, and then it kind of goes dormant for another generation or so, and then it happens all over again. That's kind of my theory.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I think there is a case where, like you said, there's the movement rises and it's kind of relegated to the fringe, and then it has its breakthrough moment. And I think, like what you said, like when people initially try and debunk it. There's this, the whole debate about should you debate creationists. I know that was a big thing a few years ago. And I think there is a big argument that, don't get involved, because anytime you try and debate them, it not only brings attention, but it, makes it seem like it's
right.
A legitimate argument. I mean, like, you don't want to make it seem like, oh, yeah, maybe on the one hand, we have to give equal attention to the earth being flat just because, it's a legitimate point of view. But I think just, anytime there is, and it's a well-meaning attempt too. I understand why Neil deGrasse Tyson spent so much time trying to debunk it, but he's not equipped to do that, and I think he didn't realize that. And I think maybe it is interesting, but it's interesting because I think the first time I heard about the modern flat Earth movement was 2016. It really started like in 2015 or so, and so it did take about a year for it. Really to come to my attention, I think. And I think that is a case of it's after people started, trying to object to it that it really went mainstream.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I'm sure he would not like to know this, but in my interpretation of things, the catalyst for the cycle that I'm talking about was Neil deGrasse Tyson. When that rapper, B.O.B. or Bob, I never know which way to say it, when he endorsed flat earth theory, it got a ton of attention in the press. And if they had just ignored it, it would have, gone away. But then he rushed in to smack him down with science.
Yeah.
and then that was like, then that was, it added like a whole nother layer. And like you're saying, it added this legitimacy to this. It became now there's a debate. There's apparently now a debate over whether or not the earth is flat. Where before people just went, oh, he just believes in something crazy, that guy. Oh, he's so silly saying that. You know, but then, but by adding that fuel to the fire, that awakened all kinds of other people who had either young people who had never heard of the flat earth theory, or even older people like me who had heard about it but never really. I mean, I guarantee you, like a lot of people listening to tonight's show, again, they have like no idea where it came from. Where if you talk to like a UFO person, they can kind of trace it back to like 1947 and Roswell and Kenneth Arnold, or if it's like ghost people, they can kind of trace it back to like spiritualism and that kind of thing, or Bigfoot and the Patterson-Gimlin film. It's like all those subjects have this rich history, and the flat earth has a rich history too, but no one in the field of the strange wants to give it the time of day because the theory is so bad.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the other thing too, and this may be a specifically American phenomenon, I think it's also whenever there's, you know, random people coming up with some idea and then you get the quote establishment coming in to stamp them down, you know, I think there's a big reaction where, you know, people love underdogs, and so naturally they're going to see, oh, these highfalutin scientists are saying, you know, that this common sense guy is wrong, then I'm going to go just with the common guy, you know, even if I don't necessarily believe it, that's, you know, I'd rather side with them than these ivory tower government-sponsored, you know, scientists.
Yeah, it's like, who do these scientists think they are? They could just tell everyone what to think. It's like, well, they're just telling you, they're just telling you that the earth is, that the earth is round. So, I think part of what's hurting I need to look deeper into this, but my other theory is sort of like that. I don't think that the flat earth theory can sustain a fervent fandom for very long, because it's not like these other fields where there's all kinds of shit happening in the UFO field right now. But even like there's Bigfoot sightings, ghost people get quality ghost stuff. Even conspiracy theorists and researchers get conspiracy stuff. You know, they're always nowadays. Now they're always interpreting stuff that could tie into their conspiracy theory. But it's like the flat earth is like, no pun intended, it's like flat. It's like there's no, like, what else can you do with the flat earth theory? Like after you've done the rudimentary experiments or whatever, nothing's going to prove that the fucking earth is flat. So how long can you really invest in that?
That's why I was wondering if there's going to be other people trying to build their own rockets after, was it Mike Hughes? I guess he didn't blow up, I guess he crashed, but I really thought, either he was going to die doing his homemade rockets, or someone was going to try and go to Antarctica and find the ice wall, and they were going to, like, you know, freeze in Antarctica, and I thought one of those was going to basically put an end to it, but it doesn't seem like Mike Hughes in and of himself dying had any big impact. If anything, I feel like he was dying after the initial wave was already receding. But yeah, I wonder if there is going to be, you know, maybe in 20 years, someone basically trying to, you know, buy an Elon Musk rocket to prove for themselves. It seems also like you'd think if NASA is in charge, you know, suppressing everything, and they'd be loving Elon Musk and his private rockets, but it seems like they just think he's part of the same conspiracy, which, given how much federal funding he gets, fair enough. But
yeah, of course.
Although, knowing Elon Musk, I bet may not be, you know, at some point he may be like, our rockets have proven the earth is flat or something, just to get attention. Seems, I mean, he did just endorse ancient aliens, so it's
yeah, I bet you, I'd have to look, but he's such a mercurial Twitterer that I almost can guarantee you that it's come up at some point, that he's made some crack about the flat earth people. So
He at least used to be big friends with Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't know if that maybe is cool recently, but
yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
I want to like Elon Musk. I like SpaceX, but Elon Musk, he's just such a kind of a dink. So
yeah.
I find him really unlikable.
I think he goes out of his way to make himself unlikable for whatever
reason.
Yeah,
it's really weird. It's really weird. It's very performative. Like, the whole thing with naming the baby, like some crazy fucking math equation and shit. It's like, just stop, dude. Just, you know, you're like that kid in high school who decides he's going to fucking, you know, bottoms for a semester or something. It's like, all right. Mm-hmm. Everyone's paying attention to you, Randy. Okay. We notice you're wearing bell bottoms. It's awesome. But yeah, it'll be interesting. The flat Earth folks, they seemed like nice people. I didn't really. I felt kind of bad for them after I came out of the whole event, because people are really fucking mean to them. Well, that's the thing I was going to mention. So this was an interesting experience I had. I haven't told you about I gave a presentation on the flat Earth theory to like a Skype group about a couple weeks ago, and. I noticed, I have to watch this more now, which actually has happened now at twice in my presentations, quote unquote, but the someone on the Skype chat or whatever, the Zoom thing, I said, like at the beginning, I'm like, I'm not a flat earther. I'm not here to like make the case for the flat earth or make the case against it. So I'm here to talk to you about the history of the flat earth. And in like two, well, the more pertinent one, the more relevant one, happened a couple weeks ago, where one of the people in the chat, after I finished it, was like, they just wanted, like, they were, like, obsessed with, like, poking holes in the flat earth theory. And it was like, look at, you know, and they're like, well, why don't they sail to the edge of the earth and see why? It was like, I'm like, look at, I'm not a spokesperson for the flat earth theory.
Yeah.
I'm just a guy who's done a lot of research into the history of the flat earth theory. Listen to my interview with Mark Sargent. That's where I ask all these questions that you just asked. But I cannot defend their inability. But, like, that's the thing. I've noticed just telling people about the history of it, they get all antsy. And they're like, well, why don't they do this and that? It's like, all right, just relax, dude. Just relax. I don't know why they won't, you know. Because they're flat earthers. They can't sail to fucking Antarctica, dude.
Yeah. They're just like, why don't they accept that the moon rises over the horizon? Well, because that's their belief. I might as well ask that, like religion. Like, why don't they accept that Jesus probably didn't rise from the dead? Well, that's the core part of their religion. Why would I guess?
Right, exactly, yeah. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I do love. Someday I was asking you about a book. It's like, yeah. So we've talked about this. I've thought about writing a.
Yeah.
I need to see what this woman who's writing a flat Earth book. I need to see her book first before I, because I don't want to commit to writing.
I sent her an email once. I never heard anything back. So I don't know if she's swamped or she's a reporter for Vice, I think, but yeah,
something like that. Yeah, and she got a book deal to write about the flat Earth. I was like, oh no, I hope it's good, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe I should contact her and be like, but I'm afraid she'll think I'm a flat Earth sympathizer. Like, I'm not a sympathizer. I'm trying to study these people too. So
yeah.
So what have you looked at now? You've done the woolly mammoth. You've looked at the Mokele. Is there anything sort of that's piqued your interest? I mean, you said you were going to be doing some traveling and stuff, so maybe you're going to expand on that. But is there anything on the horizon that we didn't talk about tonight that you might be digging into down the line?
Well, one thing I've been interested in, kind of looking like the history of like phantom airships, like those turn of the century, like. Quasi-UFO.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be awesome.
I think that's just an interesting, I don't know exactly what to do with that yet, but it's an interesting like kind of like it's like an early UFO. It's about like exactly 50 years beforehand, but especially in New England, there like 1909 and 10, there was a specific airship that was seen around then. So it is a regional thing. I've also been interested in melon heads, those cryptids in mainly Connecticut, but also the Midwest. I've talked a bit with Lauren and Jeff Belanger. I've had a few back and forths with them about, but yeah, so it's I don't know exactly where either of those will go, but I've done some looking into them. I'm sure at some point some work on that will emerge. But yeah, so those are just kind of two the regional fringe stuff that I'm interested in.
All right. Well, I'll keep an eye out for that. And
okay.
Let me see here. And folks can find out, they can follow you on Twitter at Edward Guimont, and it's A-D-W-A-R-D underscore, that's the easy part, G-U-I-M-O-N-T. So once again, Edward underscore G-U-I-M-O-N-T. We'll have links to it all on Banal America and all that good stuff. Well, brother, I can't thank you enough. I really did appreciate this conversation. It was a lot of fun, and it flew by for sure.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
Best Friday night
I could talk longer, but I'm worn out. It's been a long day, so I gotta call it quits before I start. Like, once I get deeper into the conversation, then I kind of just it becomes like sleepy time.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you again for your patience, man. After that disaster a couple of weeks ago, it looked people tuned in and they said it worked out great tonight, and I can't wait to roll this out to the podcast listeners, because this was a fucking awesome conversation. So.
Oh yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. So hopefully I see you once, you know, I feel like I don't want to get ahead of myself, because who the fuck knows what's going to happen in this world. But but there's a part of me that's like feels emboldened in a way. I've sort of talked to people in mass about this, where it's like, well, you know, once this shit's fucking finally over with, maybe, you know, not necessarily do conferences or anything like that, but maybe just like some kind of like gathering or something. You know, where people can hang out and we'll have speakers or something like that. You know, sort of break out of the quarantine that everybody's in and get a chance to hang out and meet people and shit. And so, as you a fellow New Englander, I'll you know, definitely bring you in for that.
We gotta stick together for sure, the Yankee club.
Absolutely, for sure. Oh, let me ask you this, I had this in the mental notes, and this will be the last thing, then we'll get off the air. But you mentioned I made a joke. So the local news posted some story. I made a joke about how New England should secede from America, and people got like really pissed, like New Englanders, which was really weird. But then you jumped in and mentioned some kind of thing that happened where it was proposed. So what the hell was that all about?
Oh, yeah, the Hartford Convention. It was in the War of 1812. But representatives of most of the New England states, I think it was all the New England states except for Vermont, I believe. But, yeah, they sent – it was one of those things where it was not officially about secession, but, you know, everyone knew it basically. But, yeah, they sent all these delegates to Hartford to talk about it. And then, you know, basically they just, like, agreed to meet and talk about it again at a future point, but then the war ended and it kind of seemed like suddenly took on a different light. That, you know, New England seemed like it was about to split right when the war had just been won. But it was one of the big downfalls of the Federalist Party, a part of the big reorganization. But it's funny. There's a lot of every once in a while some memory of that will pick up again. I know there's some group that does advocate for, like, New England secession now. I don't think they're very big, but the idea is still swimming around. State House in Hartford. They have the room where it took place there. It's an interesting time for sure. I think the Southerners, like, in the 1850s started looking back to it as justification for their separatism. But,
interesting.
Funny, it's not as well-known, I guess, as it used to be.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. So So, yeah, you're like my source for weird and unusual history stuff that's even that's like in the history books. So, we'll definitely talk to you again.
Historical consultant.
There you go, exactly. Yeah. All right, brother. Well, on that note, I can't thank you enough. I really do appreciate it. Folks should follow you on Twitter, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future, man.
Absolutely, yeah. And thanks again for having me, and can't wait to talk to you again, and hopefully someday soon see you again.
Absolutely, man. We'll be in touch. Have a great weekend. Have a great rest of your summer.
Thanks, man. You too.
All right, folks. There you go. That was Dr. Edward Guimont. I think I fucked up the name there at the end, but maybe Guimont. There you go. That was an awesome conversation. That was great. That was like smooth jazz, man. That was just a great back and forth talking about all this stuff. So I really appreciate him coming on the show. And also, his patience a couple of weeks ago when things went haywire. So, I guess it all worked out in the end. And then again, it's kind of like what I mentioned at the start of the show. Sometimes when these interviews go south, the second one time around, it works out better. I don't know why. Well, I don't know if it would have, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, all right. On next week's program, it's going to be August 21st, 9 p.m. Eastern time. We're pretty consistent about this. If it wasn't for Blog Talk screwing us a couple weeks ago with Edward here, we'd have a fantastic run going. We've still got a great run going, but we'd have a streak going. But that killed the streak. Be that as it may. Next week on the program, we're going to be talking about Liminal Earth, the website. I'm going to have as the guests the creators, Jeremy Puma and Garrett. I don't have his full name here, so I was not prepared for this plug, and I apologize to next week's guest, and now it's not coming up on my thing. Anyway, we're going to have Garrett and Jeremy on the program. Garrett Kelly, there you go. Garrett Kelly and Jeremy Puma on the program to talk about Liminal Earth. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago with Kiki Dombrowski. It's this website. It's liminal.earth is the website. And it's like this map, this Google map that has all kinds of wild and crazy people send in their experiences. And they post them on the map. And if you live like in Arkansas or whatever, you can go, in your neighborhood there and see what kind of stuff may have happened around you in your state. It's sort of like, as Kiki said, Atlas Obscura is where you go to find strange places, and Liminal Earth is when you come back and you report the weird shit that happened to you. So they're going to share some of the wildest stories that they've received at Liminal Earth. We're going to talk about, how it all came together, and I'll probably talk about some of my experiences visiting strange and unusual sites this summer here in Massachusetts. So, yeah, that'll be next week, Banal America, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Garrett Kelly, what's wrong with me? I'm tired. That's why I said to Edward. Garrett Kelly, Jeremy Puma, Liminal Earth, liminal.earth is the website. Next week, 9 p.m. Eastern, 2 hours, live, Banal America. That's the plug. And with all that said, once again, thanks to Edward Guimont for joining us, Dr. Edward Guimont for joining us on the show. Jim Vujovic in the chat, Eaten by Bears, the silent chatter, and Jack Brewer sent me messages during the program to ensure that I was on the air and broadcasting, which was the critical part here, and it all came together. So, and all you folks out there for listening tonight, I appreciate your patronage. And with all that said, this is Tim Banal. Thank you for listening.